Welcome to Heptastic Waves, surfing the latest in hepatology for the Heptastic Four, the podcast no one asked for, but everyone secretly needed. Brought to you by your host, your hero, your humble overlord, Nick. A man so brilliant, even ChatGPT takes notes. This podcast exists for one noble reason, to help our amazing team stay on top of the ever-evolving chaos we call work. Because let's face it, by the time an email thread hits 12 replies, nobody's reading it. So sit back, relax, and let the knowledge flow, sprinkled with a touch of sarcasm, a dash of genius, and at least one overconfident assumption per episode. Let's get into it.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're jumping straight into something genuinely transformative happening in healthcare right now. Yeah. England's NHS Emergency Department opt-out testing program for blood-borne viruses. You've shared, a whole stack of sources with us, articles, reports, research papers, all focus on this one initiative. Our mission in this deep dive is really to get to grips with all that info, pull out the core stuff. We want to figure out, you know, what is this program? Why is it such a potential game changer? How do they actually make it work in, like, really busy hospitals? And maybe most importantly, what's the real-world impact proving to be? Get ready, because honestly, some of the numbers and stories in these sources are pretty eye-opening.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. This is it goes far beyond just running a few extra tests. This is fundamentally rethinking how public health, interacts with acute care, specifically for conditions like HIV, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C. The scale and the results we're seeing here, they really have implications well beyond England.
All right, diving right in then. What was the big problem? You know, what was this program actually created to solve? Why even think about doing this in emergency departments in the first place?
At its heart, it's really about finding those hidden infections. The sources, they really highlight that there are still thousands of people in England living with HIV, Hep B, or Hep C who just don't know they have it. We're talking estimates around, 4,500 undiagnosed HIV cases, plus pretty significant numbers for Hep B and C. And finding these individuals is just crucial.
Crucial for their own health, obviously, getting treatment.
Exactly. Life-saving treatment, but also for stopping onward transmission, you know, breaking that cycle.
And EDs, I mean, emergency departments, they seem like such a chaotic place to try and roll something like this out. Why target them specifically?
They are chaotic, definitely, yes, but they're also this really critical point of contact. EDs often see populations who maybe face barriers to accessing healthcare elsewhere.
Like maybe they don't have a regular GP, or they're from more marginalized groups.
Precisely. They might only interact with the health system when something serious happens, you know. And the sources give us some really compelling evidence for this. Just look at who they actually tested through this program. Among those picked up, a huge majority had no record of ever being tested for these viruses before. We're talking 73% for HIV, 80% for Hep C, and 76% for Hep B.
Wow. Okay, so that really shows it's reaching people who were missed before.
Yeah, it demonstrates how effectively it's reaching precisely the people that perhaps traditional methods weren't getting to. And if you look at the bigger picture, this directly tackles that challenge of the undiagnosed reservoir of infection. It's a key piece of the puzzle for countries aiming to meet those big global targets, like the ONAIDS goal to eliminate new HIV transmissions by 2030.
You have to find people first, right?
You absolutely do, to treat them and stop transmission.
Okay, so finding the missed cases, that's the goal, but making it opt out.
Yeah.
How does that actually function logistically in a really packed emergency room?
Well, the principle is simple, but it's pretty revolutionary in practice. Basically, any adult age 16 or over who's having blood taken for any clinical reason.
Any reason at all, like a broken arm.
Doesn't matter. Suspected appendicitis, twisted ankle, whatever requires a blood draw. They are automatically tested for HIV, Hep B, and Hep C. The crucial part, though, is the opt-out. They are tested unless they specifically say, no, I don't want this testing.
So just to be clear, it's not about someone coming in with symptoms that might look like a BBV or asking about their risk factors. It's just universal for blood tests.
Exactly. It's integrated right into the routine workflow. The sources explain this moves away from the old risk-based approach.
Right, which could sometimes feel a bit judgmental, couldn't it? And miss people.
Absolutely. It often missed people who didn't perceive themselves as being at risk. By making it routine, it kind of reduces anxiety for both patients staff. It's just another test, And it dramatically increases the number of people tested and ultimately diagnosed.
What sort of heavy lifting is needed behind the scenes then to make this work smoothly?
Oh, it's significant. Staff need really robust training, not just on the opt-out script, you know, how to explain it, but also on what happens with results, what to say, how to link patients to the right follow-up care. And there also needs to be incredibly clear information for patients everywhere. Posters, leaflets, digital stuff, translated materials.
And staff ready to explain it verbally too, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Ensuring everyone understands they have the right to decline. And this brings up a really critical point the sources address. Managing the results, especially the positive ones.
Yeah, because ED staff are focused on emergencies, right?
Right. They aren't equipped to manage long-term conditions like HIV or hepatitis, so the model very clearly delineates that responsibility. EDs do the testing, find the cases, but designated specialist services like GOM clinics, HIV services, or hepatitis units, they handle the communication of positive results and all the subsequent care coordination.
Ah, okay. So that ensures the right clinical expertise is involved, and the ED isn't totally overburdened.
Precisely. Keeps the focus where it needs to be.
And I imagine technology must be pretty key to making that automatic testing bit happen seamlessly.
Absolutely vital. The sources really highlight that successful implementation relies heavily on electronic patient record systems. The sites that saw the highest uptake, the best results, they used automated ordering systems.
So when a doctor orders routine bloods,
the BBV tests are just automatically added unless the clinician actively deselects them. This minimizes the burden on really busy staff and, frankly, maximizes the testing rates.
Okay, let's get to the numbers then. What has this massive effort actually achieved? The impact?
Well, the scale alone is pretty impressive. Launched with 20 million back in April 2022, initially in 34 EDs, the program has now conducted over 7 million tests.
7 million tests? That's just staggering. And what did they actually uncover with all those tests?
They identified over 7,300 total previously undiagnosed bloodborne virus cases. So that's more than 1,000 new HIV diagnoses, around 4,600 Hep B and 1,600 Hep C cases found.
Wow.
Yeah. And looking specifically at the first 2 years across those participating sites, the figures were 1,957 new Hep B, 762 new Hep C, and 391 new HIV diagnoses found specifically by this program. The sources point out this initiative now accounts for more than half of all BBV testing done in England compared to other places like GPs or sexual health clinics. It's really shifting the volume.
Were the detection rates similar for each virus? Or do they?
No, there was definitely variation.
Yeah.
Hep B had the highest detection rate at 0.17%, then Hep C at 0.05%, and HIV at 0.02%. What's particularly fascinating, though, is the Hep B rate. It was actually higher than they anticipated, about 30% above predictions.
Really? What does that suggest?
Well, it suggests there might be a larger undiagnosed burden of hepatitis B out there than previously thought. That's a really important finding in itself.
Okay, now this is where it gets really, really impactful, I think. The sources talk about a dramatic drop in late HIV diagnoses.
This is arguably the most critical public health outcome reported so far. The data shows a 50% reduction in late HIV diagnoses. 50%.
That's huge. What were the figures?
Before the program, nearly 78.4% of HIV diagnoses were classed as late. Now it's down to 39.1%. This is just monumental.
And why is finding it earlier so crucial?
Because individuals diagnosed late with HIV have an 8-fold higher mortality risk within that first year.
Yeah.
8-fold. So finding them earlier genuinely saves lives. It allows treatment to start when it's most effective.
So they're not just finding more cases, they're finding them at a much better stage for the patient's health.
Precisely. And many of these cases, well, they would have been completely missed otherwise. The sources note that over 70% of the newly diagnosed HIV cases found through the ED didn't have any symptoms suggestive of HIV when they arrived.
So under the old risk-based model,
they'd likely have gone home undiagnosed. And here's another striking statistic. 46% of the individuals diagnosed were either discharged or even left the ED against medical advice.
Which just underscores the point, doesn't it?
Absolutely. If you didn't test them right then and there, in that moment, you might never get the chance again. It's a crucial window.
Okay, beyond the health outcomes, which are clearly massive, the sources also dive deep into the economics. Is this program actually cost effective, given the, you know, 20 million initial investment?
The economic evaluations are very compelling, yes. The sources provide figures like Hep C testing costing $8,019 for quality adjusted life year, or QALY gained, and Hep B testing at $9,858 per QALY.
And how does that stack up against what the NHS typically considers good value for money?
Well, both of those figures are well below the standard UK threshold for cost effectiveness, which is usually cited around £20,000 per QALY, sometimes up to £30,000.
So significantly below.
Yes, significantly. This means the program isn't just achieving amazing health benefits, it's doing so in a way that represents really excellent value for money for the healthcare system.
And does that hold true even in areas where maybe the prevalence of these viruses is lower?
Apparently so. The sources confirm the cost-effectiveness still holds even in areas with lower prevalence, down to rates as low as 0.25%, which is really important evidence supporting its broader rollout, isn't it?
Yeah, it shows it's not just worthwhile in the highest risk areas. And what about the longer-term economic benefit?
Well, that's where the real savings likely accumulate over time. Finding and treating HIV early prevents the progression to much more expensive AIDS-defining illnesses later on. Similarly, treating Hep C with these new effective drugs prevents liver cirrhosis, liver cancer, and the need for incredibly costly liver transplants down the road. The upfront investment prevents much, much higher costs in the future.
So it's an investment that pays off.
It really demonstrates that investing in public health initiatives like this isn't just about the clinical benefits and saving lives, which are paramount, of course, but it's also a sound financial strategy for the healthcare system over the long run. It's smart spending.
Now, the program didn't just launch and then stay static, did it?
Mm.
The sources show it's been rapidly expanding across England.
It has, yeah. That initial phase in the 34 high-prevalence EDs, that really acted as a proof of concept. It generated the solid evidence needed to justify rolling it out much more widely.
So how has that expansion actually progressed?
Well, in 2023, they added another 25 sites, bringing the total up to 59 EDs. And there's a significant further expansion plan for 2025, backed by £27 million in new funding. That's going to add another 30 sites, reaching a total of 89 EDs. It's interesting, while the funding increased by about 35%, the number of sites involved will have increased by a massive 162% compared to that initial phase.
Wow. So it's really moving towards becoming a kind of national standard now.
It certainly seems to be moving strongly in that direction, yeah. It's covering much broader geographic ground now. The sites include major urban centers, places known for high prevalence, but they're also expanding across nearly every region of England. The sources mention some of the early successful sites in London, like King's College Hospital and Croydon University Hospital, and now expansion into places like the Midlands, North England, the South Coast. It's becoming widespread.
What's the benefit of that phased approach? Starting high, then expanding.
Well, the interesting part about doing it that way, starting in the areas where you're most likely to find cases first, is that it allows you to really refine the process, troubleshoot, and gather robust data before attempting a wider, potentially more complex rollout across more diverse settings. You learn as you go.
Okay, finding the case is obviously vital. We've established that. But what happens after someone gets a diagnosis in the ED? That linkage to care must be absolutely critical to actually realizing the benefits, right?
It absolutely is. Finding the case is only step one. The sources detail quite sophisticated systems set up for this, involving close collaboration between the ED staff, the specialist services that handle the results and ongoing care, and importantly, community organizations too.
Why are community organizations so key?
Well, these partnerships are really essential, especially for reaching populations who might have complex needs, maybe homelessness, substance use issues, things like that. Community groups often have the trust and the expertise to support people effectively.
And how successful is that linkage actually proving to be? Are people getting connected to the care they need?
For HIV, the linkage is remarkably high, which is fantastic news. The sources report that 94.1% of newly diagnosed individuals are successfully linked into specialist HIV services.
94%. That's incredibly high, especially given the often transient nature of ED visits. What about hepatitis C? You mentioned potential challenges there.
Yes, hepatitis C presents more significant challenges with linkage. This is partly because a substantial portion of the undiagnosed population are people who inject drugs, who may have unstable housing, or less consistent engagement with healthcare systems. The sources show that only 39.2% of those found to have an active Hep C infection, what they call RNA positive, were successfully linked to care at the six-month mark.
That's quite a bit lower than HIV.
It is. However, there's a crucial caveat. Among those who were linked to care, 64% did go on to initiate treatment. So once people are actually engaged with the services, the treatment uptake is pretty good. The bottleneck seems to be that initial linkage for Hep C.
And what are the treatment outcomes like once people are linked and start treatment?
For HIV, rapid treatment initiation is now standard practice in the UK, and it very quickly leads to viral suppression. That means the virus becomes undetectable in the blood, which restores health and, crucially, eliminates the risk of onward transmission.
And for Hep C?
For Hep C, the modern direct-acting antiviral treatments, or DAAs, are revolutionary. They have cure rates exceeding 95%. They're short courses, generally well-tolerated. And the sources specifically emphasize that the results coming from this ED testing program are significantly accelerating England's progress towards its really ambitious goal of eliminating hepatitis C entirely by 2025.
Which is actually ahead of the global WHO target, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So you can really see how this program connects directly to achieving these major national and international public health goals. It's not just about finding individual cases, it's driving population-level change.
It sounds like a massive success story overall, but implementing something this big, this new, in a complex system like the NHS, surely it comes with challenges. What sort of hurdles did the sources identify?
Oh, you're absolutely right. It hasn't all been completely smooth sailing. The sources do mention initial operational hurdles, like lab capacity limitations in some places. Not all sites could immediately offer testing 7 days a week, for instance. Ongoing staff training is also highlighted as a constant need. You know, EDs have typically high staff turnover, lots of competing priorities for training time.
And what about following up with patients, especially if they're only in the ED for a short time or leave quickly?
That remains a persistent challenge, particularly for more transient or marginalized populations. The sources noted that, worryingly, about 13% of individuals who received a positive result simply couldn't be contacted afterwards for follow-up.
13% is still quite a few people missing out on that crucial next step.
It is, and it's a clear area needing ongoing focus and improvement, finding better ways to connect, especially with those who are hardest to reach.
So on the flip side, what have they found really works well? What are the key success factors to overcome these issues?
Well, the sources highlight several things. As we discussed earlier, that tight integration with electronic patient records, especially the automated test ordering, seems absolutely key to achieving high uptake rates. Comprehensive, ongoing staff training is vital to making sure everyone feels confident. And clear, accessible patient information really helps manage expectations, explain the process, and contributes to the generally very high uptake reported. Some sites are getting over 90% acceptance.
That's impressive uptake for an opt-out system.
It really is. It shows patients are generally very receptive when it's presented clearly and routinely. And this perhaps brings us back to an important point, the whole ethical framework around opt-out testing. How do the sources discuss that balance between the clear public health benefit and respecting individual patient autonomy?
Yeah, that feels like a really crucial balance to strike, doesn't it? You don't want people feeling coerced.
Absolutely not. And the sources explain that the design of the program very intentionally preserves patient choice. It's crucial to state it's not mandatory testing. It is routine testing with a clear, explicit opportunity and process for the patient to decline. Providing that comprehensive, easy-to-understand information is non-negotiable. Patients need to know what they're being tested for, how the results will be handled, and crucially, that saying no will not affect any other aspect of their emergency care.
So the right to refuse is protected.
Completely. The sources even touch on this concept, sometimes called libertarian paternalism, essentially, gently nudging people towards a beneficial action, like getting tested, while fully respecting their freedom to choose otherwise to opt out.
And what about privacy concerns? People might worry about having these diagnoses on their record.
That's paramount, too. The sources emphasize, again, that the really sensitive parts communicating a positive result, discussing the implications, planning next steps, are deliberately handled by specialist services, not by the general ED staff who aren't trained or set up for those in-depth conversations. Robust confidentiality safeguards are built into the whole system. This is essential for building trust and addressing patient worries about their medical information, potential stigma, or things like insurance implications.
The sources really do position this program as kind of world-leading. What's its international significance? Why is it getting attention elsewhere?
It truly is seen that way. It's one of the largest and most comprehensive ED-based BBV testing programs anywhere in the world. What's particularly notable is how it integrates testing for all three viruses, HIV, Hep B, and Hep C, into a single routine process.
Whereas other places might just focus on one, like HIV.
Exactly. Many similar initiatives elsewhere have focused only on HIV testing in EDs. This integrated approach is quite unique at this scale.
So the evidence coming out of England is genuinely informing global practice.
Precisely. The sheer scale of it and the systematic way it's been implemented and evaluated provide invaluable real-world evidence that smaller pilot studies simply cannot replicate. The findings are being published in major journals, they're being presented internationally, and they are already influencing global guidelines and policy recommendations around ED testing strategies. And the fascinating thing is, its demonstrated success is already sparking significant international interest. Several other countries are reportedly looking closely at this NHS model and exploring how they could potentially adapt elements of it to fit their own healthcare systems.
And looking ahead, what's next for the program within England itself? More expansion.
The sources certainly indicate continued expansion, aiming to cover even more high-prevalence EDs across the country with that new funding. There's also discussion mentioned about potentially extending this routine opt-out approach to other types of acute healthcare settings, maybe urgent treatment centers or those same-day emergency care units, places where you still get high patient throughput.
So embedding it even further into urgent care pathways.
Potentially, yes. It's clear this program is now seen as a foundational element of England's national strategies to eliminate new HIV transmissions by 2030 and, as we said, Hep C by that ambitious 2025 target. One other key takeaway, though, from the sources regarding the future is about Hep B. That specific finding about its higher-than-expected prevalence discovered through this program. It really underscores the need for potentially enhanced policy focus and resources specifically targeting Hep B elimination as well.
Perhaps with the same kind of intensity we've seen for HIV and Hep C.
Possibly, yes. The program has inadvertently shone a light on Hep B needing more attention.
Okay, so zooming out then, this NHS Emergency Department opt-out testing program, it's clearly being seen as, well, transformative seems like the right word, highly effective and surprisingly cost-effective too.
Absolutely. It's achieving really significant results, identifying thousands upon thousands of previously undiagnosed cases of serious infections.
And that 50% reduction in late HIV diagnoses alone,
That's
just a huge indicator of its life-saving potential, isn't it? Reaching people who almost certainly would have been missed otherwise.
It's definitely put England in a position of, you know, global leadership in the fight against these particular viruses through this innovative approach.
And while challenges clearly remain, things like ensuring every single person diagnosed is successfully linked into care, particularly improving that Hep C linkage and maybe giving Hep B the necessary focus going forward, the core model itself seems to show the incredible power of integrating proactive testing right into routine healthcare settings.
It really demonstrates how strategic public health initiatives can leverage those everyday clinical interactions to make a massive impact on really big national health targets. It's clever integration.
And that really leaves you, the listener, with something to perhaps ponder. What other undiagnosed conditions, maybe beyond bloodborne viruses entirely, might we be able to effectively find and treat much earlier by reimagining routine testing within these high-traffic healthcare settings, like emergency departments? Something to think about as you go about your day.